seeing Krishna from neophyte to praying. And over the next few days, we'll discuss the question of, are you seeing Krishna? And who is seeing Krishna? Our hope is that you'll see the dynamic experience of Krishna consciousness and how we're not dealing with religious doctrine or religious theology. We are dealing with the practical, daily, dynamic, ever-fresh reality of Krishna's presence. Hopefully, by the time we finish, you will ask yourself the question, why am I not seeing Krishna? Instead of putting the burden on Krishna, what's wrong with you? Why aren't you here? We're chanting your name, we're serving you. Where are you? What's going on? Instead, the burden should be upon us. What's wrong with us? Krishna is everywhere. Why are we not seeing Krishna? What do we have to do in order to see Krishna? So today, we'll start step one. If you can't get past step one in terms of your life's activities and consciousness, then there's no hope of God realization. Of course, everything in the process of Krishna consciousness is meant to get you to step one and past. It's not difficult. But for those in the bodily conception of life, those who are determined to remain in the bodily conception of life, can they see? Not possible to see anything of the spirituality. Even Brahman realization, the realizing the Lord in terms of the impersonal Brahman effulgence, even that is not available to someone in the bodily conception of life. What to speak of super soul realization and Bhagavan realization, the last word in God consciousness, understanding Krishna full of all opulences as the source of everything. Now this is a verse from Bhagavatam. It's quoted by Lord Chaitanya in Chaitanya Charitamrita in his instruction to Sanatana Goswami. So, we can either chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Jai Jai, Chaitanya Bhagavatam verse quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. As we spoke yesterday, it's especially sweet when you look at verses that have been recited by Lord Chaitanya. Just like we give special attention to verses quoted often by Srila Prabhupada. As these shlokas come through the mouth of the great devotees and are repeated, they become sweeter and sweeter. So certainly, it's always interesting to see why this verse, why is Lord Chaitanya choosing this verse? It's a very nice meditation. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Shivan Bhagavatam. Second canto, chapter 5, text 13, 4. Majalila, chapter 22, text 32. This verse is spoken by Lord Brahma to Narada Muni. Virajamanaya yasya statu ikshapate muya namohita vikantante mamam iti durjiya virajamanaya yasya statu ikshapate muya namohita vikantante mamam iti durjiya virajamanaya yasya statumishapate muya namohitana kathante mamam iti durjiya. Virajamanaya being ashamed. Yasya,
yasya,
of whom?
Statum,
statum,
to remain.
Iksha,
pache,
in the line of sight.
Amurya,
amurya,
by that.
Maya,
maya.
Vimohita,
vimohita,
bewildered. Vikatante,
vikatante,
boast.
Mama,
I. Aham,
I.
Iti,
iti,
thus.
Durjiya,
durjiya,
having poor intelligence.
Translation. The external illusory energy of Krishna, known as Maya, is always ashamed to stand in front of Krishna, just as darkness is ashamed to remain before the sunshine. However, that Maya bewilders unfortunate people who have no intelligence. Thus, they simply boast that this material world is theirs and that they are its enjoyers. Purport. The entire world is bewildered because people are thinking, this is my land. America is mine. India is mine. Not knowing the real value of life, people think that the material body and the land where it is produced are all in all. This is the basic principle behind nationalism, socialism, and communism. Such thinking, which simply bewilders the living being, is nothing but rascalism. It is due to the darkness of Maya. But as soon as one becomes Krishna conscious, he is immediately relieved from such misconceptions. This verse is quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam. There's also another appropriate verse in Srimad Bhagavatam. Shashvat prashantam abhayam praktibodhamatam shuddham samadsat asata paramatatam shabdhoryatra purukara kavan kriyato maya padaitya dhivuke cha vilajamana tadvai padam bhagavata paramasya punsa brahmetya dhira ajasya sukham vishokam. What is realized as the absolute Brahman is full of unlimited bliss without grief. That is certainly the ultimate phase of the supreme enjoyer, the personality of Godhead. He is eternally devoid of all disturbances, fearless, completely conscious, as opposed to matter, uncontaminated and without distinctions. He is the principal primeval cause of all causes and effects, in whom there is no sacrifice for fruitive activities, and in whom the illusory energy does not stand. This verse was spoken by Lord Brahma when he was questioned by the great sage Narada. Narada was surprised to see the creator of the universe meditating, and this caused him to think there might be someone greater than Lord Brahma. While answering the great sage Narada, Lord Brahma described the position of Maya and the bewildered living entities. This verse was spoken in that connection. Translation again. The external illusory energy of Krishna, known as Maya, is always ashamed to stand in front of Krishna, just as darkness is ashamed to remain before the sunshine. However, that Maya bewilders unfortunate people who have no intelligence. Thus, they simply boast that this material world is theirs, and they are its enjoyers. Om Jnanatimanandasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. This verse is talking about the real world. It's giving us insight into how things are happening. An intelligent person wants to understand that. How am I being bewildered? How could it be that what I'm seeing is not actually the real thing? Yes, this is what we should be thinking about. Instead of just doing things and acting and going through the various phases of time. Oh, I was a child, now I'm a teenager, then I'll be a young adult, then I'll be an adult, and I don't want to think about being an old person. I certainly don't want to think about death. This is just blindly going through the phases of life. This blindness is induced by the bodily conception. By being immersed, submerged in body consciousness, you don't think about who you are and what's around you. This is the great blessing of Maya. You do not think, you do not care. And although you're experiencing so many things in terms of happiness and distress, you never see what's really going on. This point is made by Shukadeva Goswami in the second canto. Pashyannapi na pashyati. You're sufficiently experienced by so many births in this material world, but you still do not see what's happening. Now it takes humility to accept this. And humility is not a quality that is given by the material energy. We're being beaten on the head, birth after birth, but still, we're proud. I know what's going on. I've got my body, I've got my senses, I've got a career, I've got a partner, I've got money, I've got this. It's amazing when you see how that pride creeps in. In such a degraded time when actually we have nothing to be proud of. So don't look for humility to be given to you by the material energy. Nor should you look for intelligence to be given to you by the material energy. Of course, if you want to learn technology, or if you want to learn how to manipulate this world as if you are the enjoyer, that kind of education you'll get. But the education to see what's really going on, no, you'll not get that from the material energy. That's not the purpose of Maya, to let you see. The purpose of Maya is to bewilder you. So you take birth after birth without ever seeing what's going on. Now, here Lord Brahma is revealing the situation. He's revealing the real world. We've spoken before about how people make sage, you come on, live in the real world. You guys are not really in touch with what's happening. Here is what's happening. There is an external energy. First of all, we have to accept that there is such a thing as Maya. This is the basis of seeing Krishna in the beginning. At least you have to accept there's something known as Maya. Maya means a blanket of ignorance, darkness that prevents you from seeing what's going on, even though everything to you looks well lit and illuminated. Just like right now, the lights are on in the room, everyone can see. How would you like it if someone told you, you're not seeing? You would object. What do you mean? The lights are on? It's obvious. What's going on? I see. Well, this is showing the humility it takes for advancing in Krishna consciousness. Now, why should we have that humility? First of all, you should understand that even though you think the lights are on and you're seeing, things aren't working out. That much you should be able to understand. Yeah, the lights are on. I think I'm seeing everything, but how come I'm always in a tough situation? How come I'm suffering? How come I'm repeating the same mistakes? What's going on? But I'm seeing. But things aren't working out even though I'm seeing. You at least have to have that kind of realization in order to make some advancement in spiritual life. Then gradually it may dawn upon you, I'm not really seeing. I think the lights are on, but I'm in the darkness of ignorance. Therefore we pray, Om Gyane Chimananda Gyananda Narsalabhaya. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, even though it seems the lights are on, I'm in darkness, with my eyes forced shut. This is the first understanding that's necessary. Please think about this point. I think I'm saved, but things are not working out. Maybe it could be I'm not seeing. Maybe I'm in the darkness, even though there's an illusion that there's light. It's not such a difficult point to understand. This is the basis of devotees saying you have imperfect senses. I'm sure you've heard it before, right? You try to do something in devotional service, or you try to speculate about some philosophical point, and some older devotee tells you, or it could even be a younger devotee, you've got imperfect senses, Prabhu. Yeah. And you may not like that, right? But you mean I've got imperfect senses. That's just a way of not answering the question. Look here, everything looks quite clear. There's this, there's that. So, therefore, right? You had that happen to you? You get a little angry at first, right? You got an imperfect sense of trouble. Don't try to put me down. It's not a put down when someone tells you you have imperfect senses. It's just the reality. So, to see Krishna, at least we have to begin with that kind of humility. Pashyanna pina pashyati. Look at my life. Look at the wreck. That should let me know that even though I'm experienced, I don't see. I think the light's on, but I'm in the darkness. Think about it. The preaching of the Bhagavatam is to first get you to understand. You're not seeing. You're in darkness, although you think the lights are on. Then, when you come to that humble realization, you can hear about Krishna. Now, what is the relationship between Krishna and the darkness? In the previous verse, Lord Chaitanya explained to Sanatana Goswami, very famous verse, which Srila Prabhupada made as the motto for the Bhaktivedanta magazine. Krishna Surya Sama Maya Hoy Andhakar. Yahan Krishna Tahan Nain Maya Maya Adhikar. Krishna is compared to sunshine and Maya is compared to darkness. Wherever there is sunshine, there cannot be darkness. As soon as one takes to Krishna consciousness, the darkness of illusion, the influence of the external energy, will immediately vanish. Both things are coming from Krishna, the darkness and the light. The darkness means the absence of the light. In that way, the darkness depends on the light for existence. We get the choice as marginal energy of Krishna where we're going to situate ourselves. You only have two choices in life. And then, according to that choice, you're swept away down the river. It's like when you go to Mayapur. You're warned, watch out for swimming in the Ganges, because every other year or so, a devotee who can't swim goes out to the middle of the Ganges and is swept away by the current. So, you choose how you're going to be swept away. That's your only choice. You can choose to be swept away by the material energy, or to be swept away by the spiritual energy. There's no alternative, nothing else going on. Either I choose to be swept away by the spiritual energy, either I choose to be swept away by the material energy. No third choice. Doesn't that make life simple? But too simple, huh? Nah, it can't be that precise, it can't be that strict. There must be some middle ground. Right? A little bit of this, a little bit of that. Yes? No, there's no middle ground. You choose which river you're going to jump into and be swept away. So what do we want? Do we want to be swept away by the river of nescience, illusory energy, bewilderment? Or do we want to be swept away by love of Krishna? It all depends on how you situate yourself, how you shape your lifestyle. So please be peaceful by accepting that there's nothing more than these two choices. Being swept away by the material energy or being swept away by the spiritual energy. There's nothing else going on in your life. Can you really think of something else that's going on in your life? Some real choice that you have? I know you'll make a big thing. Oh, I'm choosing this career instead of that one. It's a very important choice. Now, it's a detail. I'm choosing to be with this person and not that one. I'm speaking materially, of course. Now, it's a detail because you've already made the only choice you can actually make. You've chosen to associate with the mode of passion and ignorance. Everything else after that's a detail. But you're taught, it's a very big decision. What career, where you'll live, who will be your partner. Just think about it. You've already made the decision, if you're cohabiting with Tri Gunamayi, the three modes of nature, you've already made the decision. You're going to be victimized by the modes of material nature. You've jumped into the material river, therefore you must be swept away. Whatever happens as you're being washed downstream, that's a detail. Suppose you jump into a rapid rushing river. They have those in South Island? Yeah, what's that down near Queenstown? What is that river?
Shadow.
Shadow. Yes, anyone jumped into the Shadow of a river? Yes. Many years ago, I went rafting on the Shadow River. So, once you get in the boat, you're gone. Everything else after that is just history. You've already made the decision, I'll go. You're going to get wet. You're going to be bounced around. Is that the main thing you should be focusing on? No, the main thing is you chose to get in the raft and go down the shallow river. Everything else that happens is the detail. How wet you get, did you fall out of the boat? Similarly, you choose to jump into the material river and be swept downstream. So why should we make such a big deal about what happens to you as you're being dragged downstream? Oh, I met this person, I studied this, I lived there. It's all the detail. You understand? Just look at the overall reality, which Maya won't let you see, although you think you see. The overall reality is you're just being dragged. But when we say like that, some people will say, oh, you're just being negative. You're stripping the humanness out of experience. Just reducing everything to a very negative thing. The people, they don't like having it pointed out that they're an illusion. Proudly they insist, the lights are on, we see everything. We know, you don't know. You people don't live in the real world. Just like when I went rafting on the Shadoga River. You can just get caught up in the whole experience and forget about the fact we chose to get in the boat. For the raft. We chose. We didn't mind. Before you go rafting on the Shadoga River, they put on a, what do you call it, a wetsuit. Yeah, you've done it. Yeah, and they give you, I think they give you a helmet also. Yes? Huh? So you put on your uniform for the experience. Just like when coming to the material world, you put on your material body and mind. Yes, let's go. Whitewater rafting in the material world. It'll be exciting. So you put on your uniform. You had that desire. Don't go. He's thinking, oh. You're really getting into it, huh? So, you put on your uniform to come to the material world, just like you put on your uniform to go rafting, whitewater rafting. You get there in Queenstown and they, I was just checking it out because many years ago I thought maybe there's some experiences like this could be used for preaching to so many tourists, so many young people, they do this. So they take you to this big room with all the wetsuits hanging up and you choose a wetsuit. Yeah. This one looks okay, yeah, this color is nice, this one fits me, you put it on. You choose your helmet. It's like coming to the material world. What is my desire? What kind of body do I want? Yeah, a snake. That would be kind of cool. Many persons, especially ladies, have told me, I wouldn't mind being born again, particularly as a snake. Slither around the ground. And so... Ladies usually say they want to take birth as a snake or a horse. Some of the ladies like horses. I forget what men usually say. But I know the ladies usually go for to be a snake or a horse. Men, a bird. Men want to be birds. That's it. Fly. So, you're going like water river rafting, you choose your uniform, and then you choose to go into the raft. The guide warns you, we're not responsible if anything happens to you. in the event that the wrath capsizes, here's what you do. You act like Ish. You don't act like that. I forgot what the instructions are when you get thrown out of a wrath. There's a way you're supposed to. You remember?
No, I didn't have to join my sisters.
So there's something you do so you don't get, you know, banged up too bad by being bashed against the rocks. This is how we experience life. We forget we chose to get in the boat. And we get so caught up with the decisions that we're making, forgetting the real decision was that I decided to go rafting, to go down the Shotover River. Similarly, to understand Bhagavad philosophy, we have to understand we made a choice. There's only two choices available. How to be swept away? Down the Shotover River of material existence? Or you can be swept away by love of Krishna. This is Queen Kunti's prayer in Bhagavatam. May my consciousness always flow to you, Krishna, just like the Ganges is forever flowing to the sea. When you get swept away by love of Krishna, Krishna reveals himself to be ever fresh. You made that decision, I'm going to love Krishna. And then everything else happens after that. Just like you choose, I'm going to be in Maya. Everything else happens after that. Therefore, we're always pointing out to people, you have the choice. Only one choice. Or you can say two choices. Shall I be swept away by the material or swept away by the spiritual nature? Once you make your choice, then things happen. Is that an excuse people give sometimes? It's like things happen, right? Things happen. Yes? When you choose Krishna, things happen. When you choose Maya, things happen. Now, how are you going to choose? The external energy of Maya belongs to Krishna. In the first canto of Bhagavatam, you've also read how Vyasadeva, in his mature realization, saw the Lord and the Lord's illusory energy. And illusory energy was standing behind the Lord, letting you know that the darkness is subordinate to the light. Krishna's illusory energy is subordinate to him. Therefore, in the Gita, Krishna says, Mama Maya Dharadeya, my Maya is so difficult to overcome unless you talk to me about how to live. I'll give you advice how to avoid my Maya. Otherwise, you'll be bewildered. You'll think you're living in an illuminated atmosphere which you see every day. This is what makes it difficult to reach out to others in Krishna consciousness. You're dealing with people who think they see, although they're living in darkness. Yes. This is what you're encountering every day. People think, I've got so many important things to do. I've got my life to fulfill. I've got my senses to satisfy. We see what's going on. We know where the action is. We know how to get things done in this world. This is what you're dealing with. And that mentality makes it difficult to teach Krishna consciousness. Except occasionally you meet persons who realize, I think I'm seeing, but things aren't working out. Could it be that I'm not seeing? Some have that experience from a previous life. Others, they're starting to understand it in this life. Others don't have the experience, and these persons are rare, with their intelligence, they can deduce the situation. They can figure it out just by analyzing. Wait a minute. This doesn't look like the real thing. Now, what is it that's preventing our seeing Krishna? This is step one to that. As Lord Brahma says, that Maya bewilders unfortunate people who have no intelligence. Thus, they simply boast that this material world is theirs and that they are its enjoyers. With this mentality, it is not possible to see Krishna. You won't even see Brahman, the all-pervading spiritual effulgence, the preliminary level of spiritual realization. So, we have a faulty vision of the world. Just see yourself. Feel that emotion. Boast. This material world is ours and we are its enjoyers. You feel that? This is our world. We are its enjoyers. Wasn't there many years ago some in the 80s some pop song, We Are the World? Yeah? You probably just still play on the radio, right? Yeah. We are the world. That's what this verse is about. We are the world. The world is ours. Some of you remember singing along to that song? It's kind of had an exhilarating feeling, right? The younger ones, you remember too? It was a popular song, wasn't it? It gave you a really, you know, bubbly feeling, right? We are the world. This is boasting this material world is ours and we are its enjoyers. Because as soon as you say we are the world, you know what the next step is. And we are its enjoyers. Where's the good time? So this is how materialists celebrate. We are the world, we are the enjoyers of the world. As long as you're thinking like that, you cannot see Krishna. Instead, you'll get Krishna's Maya, the curtain that prevents such foolish people from seeing. By that vision of thinking we are the world and its enjoyers, you disqualify yourself from seeing Krishna. You get Maya. Now what is Maya? Maya is produced by Krishna, just as clouds are produced by the sun. You know the example. The sun shines over the water and evaporates water, and the evaporated water becomes clouds. So although clouds are produced by the sun, the purpose of the clouds is to block the sun. Similarly, Maya is produced by Krishna, so to speak. But the purpose of Maya is to cover Krishna from your vision. So as long as we're thinking like that, there's no question of God realization. Now where are you going to go to get such a clear understanding of things? Go to any church, any mosque, whatever. You won't hear such clear knowledge. This is Bhagavatam coming through Parampara, coming through the chain of succession from Lord Brahma. Therefore, you can see clearly even in the darkness of this material world. Living in the darkness of ignorance, we're acting like Krishna's competitor. Have you ever competed with someone? Maybe you had a brother or a sister, and they had something you wanted, or they were getting something, and you also wanted to get it. Anyone had that experience competing with your brother or sister? Yes. So, that shows you what it's like to compete with Krishna. Just think about it. I know it's a hard one to grasp, this psychology of material existence. I'm here to compete with Krishna. Like someone opens a business and is making money, so immediately someone else wants to open up the same kind of business and compete. It's capitalism. Why should there just be McDonald's? There should also be Burger King. Give people a choice in their hellish delights. As soon as someone is successful in one thing, someone else wants to compete. That's the way this world is. Why just go to the national bank It should be ANZ. BNZ. This one, that one. And they're all competing. That's the natural tendency of life in this material world. When someone else has something, you want also. So, we're here to compete with Krishna. Why should Krishna be the only enjoyer? What about me? So Prabhupada explained that this is the attitude by which you left the spiritual world. Devotees would ask him, if we were with Krishna, we were fully satisfied. So how could we leave a situation of full satisfaction with Krishna to come to the material world? So Prabhupada patiently explained. There's no question of not being satisfied with Krishna. It's just that you have minute independence, and therefore you decided, I wonder what something else tastes like. I wonder what it's like to do what Krishna does. Therefore, you had to come to the material world. He gave the example of, let's say, every day you're getting nice dal, rice, chapatis. Or even every day you're getting nice pizza. So it's not that you don't like it after some days. But what would you say after 1 week of wonderful pizza every day? What would you say? I wonder what something else tastes like. So it's not that you lose your appreciation of pizza. It's just that you want something else. Or, here's a good male example. Men. Men want women to understand that if they, you know, have a little affair on the side, it's not because they've lost appreciation of their wife. It's just, you know, a little bit of diversion, you know. They expect the ladies to accept that. And when the lady finds out, the men are always, look, she was nothing. You're my everything. You're just a little bit of action on the side. Doesn't mean I don't love you anymore. And of course, the ladies just take the opposite one. It shows where you're really at. You don't care. And the man's totally bewildered. It was just, you know, a little bit of diversion. This is a toy I was playing with for a night. And haven't I shown you with my life that you're my everything? So to the men, it makes complete sense. You know, there's the wife who who's your everything. And then there's these other little affairs that are just temporary nothings. The men have a hard time understanding. Just because I had a one-night affair with that girl, why do you think it means I don't care for you anymore? Ladies can't swallow it. Well, this is what you have to cope with in material marriages. In Krishna consciousness, of course, we have strict rules for behavior. But in material life, things get complicated. So similarly, you're with Krishna, and it's not that you lose satisfaction with Krishna. It's not that you get tired of Krishna, but you just start thinking, I wonder what it would be like to taste something else. What would it be like to be the enjoyer? It's very subtle. Those devotees always ask this point, even now, they keep raising it, although Prabhupada has answered it so explicitly, they can't accept. Oh, no, it doesn't make sense. Oh, no. If we were with Krishna, we would never want to leave. How can there be any ignorance when we're with Krishna? They refuse to accept that Krishna's system is that you have independence. You can't push that away. All right, so you're with Krishna, you're satisfied, but you're thinking, I wonder what something else is like. I wonder what it would be like to imitate Krishna. You're not thinking, let me go to the material world. No, you don't think that. You think, I wonder what it would be like to imitate Krishna. And it just so happens that the only way you can imitate Krishna is in the material world. So here you are. It's not that you say, wow, here I am in the spiritual world. Oh, I want to go to the material world. It's not like that. Here I am with Krishna. I'm really tired of Krishna. It's not like that. You just have the ability to misuse your independence. So then you're given the material world. That's what goes on. Then again, you're never away from Krishna. In that sense, no one ever falls from the spiritual world because Krishna is always present. Krishna's present now. But Krishna's illusory energy is blocking his presence from us. It's not that Krishna's gone, Krishna's not here. Our vision has gone. That's what's going on. Krishna directly says in Bhagavad Gita, it's my illusory energy. He directly says in Bhagavad Gita, Bina me prakriti ashtada. The earth, water, fire, air, ether, the mind, intelligence, and ego. It's mine. But we don't see it that way. We simply boast. We are the world. We are its enjoyers. We don't see that even the material world is connected to Krishna. Bhakti yoga means to revive the vision of seeing everything connected to Krishna. Then you're no longer in the material world. Actually, it is a fact. Never are you ever away from Krishna. You just dream that it's so. So actually, you never leave Krishna. At night, when you go down, you lay down to sleep. Do you leave your present situation? No, but you dream you do. When you wake up in the morning, you find, here I am in the bed. But while you were dreaming, you were so many places, so many realms, so many dimensions. But when you wake up, I've been on the bed all the time. Similarly, when you wake up from Maya, you realize, I've always been with Krishna. Therefore, separation from Krishna is actually impossible. In any way you look at it. Even in love of Krishna, separation is impossible. Because the more you feel Krishna's absence in love, the more Krishna is present. That is the sublime goal of Lord Chaitanya's process. Lord Chaitanya taught love of Krishna is separation. The more you miss Krishna, the more Krishna is present. This is the mystery. We wake up from our dream that we're separate from Krishna and that Krishna is not here. We wake up by connecting everything in the world to Krishna. Just like, let's take Bhagavad Gita. How many of you, when you read the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita and the list of all the warriors, thought, oh, what's the point of all this? How many of you raise your hand? Yeah, let's get to the real transcendental stuff, right? Let's get to the real spiritual stuff. When Krishna is there, Arjuna is there, and Sanjaya is narrating the list of all the warriors on both sides, you might think, what's the point? This is just material warriors. You know, who wants to hear their names? But what is the point? Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagya Ushute. Rupa Goswami explains. Things in relation to Krishna have complete value in Krishna consciousness. Everything about the battlefield of Kurukshetra is related to Krishna. Krishna's there. The battle is being arranged by Krishna for his purposes. Therefore, we become Krishna conscious just by hearing the names of the warriors who are fighting in the war. Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's book. Everything in the battlefield of Kurukshetra is Krishna's energy. And because Krishna is personally there, everything about the battle becomes noteworthy in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes people say, though, oh, I don't want to hear about Kurukshetra and the war. I want to hear Rasa Leela. But if you cannot appreciate Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, you won't be able to ever appreciate Rasa Leela. You cannot artificially distinguish. I want this Leela. I want to hear about this Leela, not that Leela. This Leela is pure and spiritual. The other Leela isn't. You can't do that. You have to learn how to see everything in relation to Krishna, even the battlefield of Kurukshetra. You have to think, if Krishna is the source of everything, because Krishna is real, then even Maya coming from Krishna is real. We don't say Maya doesn't exist. We say Maya exists, it's real, but we shouldn't be in contact with Maya. That is the point. The illusion energy is real because the illusion energy comes from Krishna. But we should not be situated in that energy. You have to choose. Just like you want pure water. Remember, maybe 20 years ago, there was no such thing as bottled water, right? Now everybody drinks bottled water. Even India, every bottled water, you know. Big business. People are choosing. We want pure water. You're making that choice. Even though you know there are different types of water available. There's even sewage water. But I don't want that. I want give me kiwi blue. I want pure water. You're choosing. You don't say the other types of water are false. They don't exist. There's no such thing as sewage water or dirty water or dish water. No, they exist, but it's not what you want. Similarly, Maya exists, but it's not what you want. It all depends on your choice. If Krishna is real, how can Krishna's energy be false? Seeing Krishna begins with the battlefield of Kurukshetra. In that you see all as Krishna's energy. The soldiers, the chariots, the ground, the battlefield itself, the arrows, the bows, everything is Krishna's energy. Therefore, the question is how to use everything in Krishna's service. And Krishna is the boss for that. That's why you can't fault Krishna when he told Arjuna to kill Karna when Karna was down on the ground fisting his chariot wheel. According to the Vedic code of battle, you don't kill another warrior when he's in such a situation. You wait until the warrior is ready to fight you with full faculties and he's fully prepared. Then it's a fair fight. But if his chariot wheel is broken, and he's down on the ground fixing his chariot, well, you don't kill him. It's considered adharmic, unfair. But Krishna told Arjuna, kill him. Everything on the battle of Kurukshetra is Krishna's energy. Krishna's the boss of his energy. That is dharma. You can't say to Krishna, who is the source of everything, the battlefield, the soldiers, dharma itself. You can't say, oh, you can't tell Arjuna to do that. It's a dharma. It's not right. Krishna is the source of everything. He's the boss about how things should be used in his service. Therefore, if we take guidance from Krishna and guidance from Krishna's representative, we'll know how to properly engage everything in Krishna's service. Of course, about Karna in particular, there's a particular reason that Krishna had. Karna had killed Arjuna's son, Abhimanyu. They had wrongfully jumped Arjuna's son, Abhimanyu, with so many Maharajis, great fighters. Even though Abhimanyu was such a powerful warrior. Because he was attacked by so many powerful generals, which wasn't right, therefore he was vanquished. So Krishna told Arjuna, there was no mercy for Abhimanyu, so there'll be no mercy for Karna. Get rid of him. Krishna's the boss of how things should be used in his service. You can't accuse Krishna of being immoral. Just like in Ras Leela, you can't accuse Krishna of dancing with others' wives. Everything belongs to Krishna. He's the proprietor. He's Suradam Sarvabhutanam. He's the best friend of all living entities. So how can you criticize Krishna for just dealing with his property? Therefore, we always say, the people who accuse Krishna of dancing with others' wives in the middle of the night, now they should point the criticism at themselves. They're dancing with someone else's wife. Their wife belongs to Krishna. They don't see it that way, though. Because we are the world. We are its enjoyer. This is real morality. Everything belongs to Krishna. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagya Ushite. Things in relation to Krishna are not the same as things not in relation to Krishna. Of course, everything is connected to Krishna, but you don't see that because of Maya. On the Battle of Kurukshetra, you have both departments of Krishna's energy acting. Destruction and construction. You've got to accept both sides of Krishna. Not just the love dance and cowherd boy side. You've got to accept Krishna's destruction side too. Just like a farmer has two departments for growing crops. The farmer has to first weed the land. That's why they plow. Get rid of the weeds. And then, once you get rid of the weeds, then you can plant the seeds and a good crop will grow. So in the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna's weeding. So you'll object, how dare Krishna do that? But if it's all Krishna's energy, what's the problem? Why can't Krishna weed his own garden? Why are you objecting? He's weeding the garden, and then he's going to cause good crops to come up. Prichit Maharaj will be in charge after Yudhisthira. That was Krishna's concern. Krishna wanted the weeds out and good crops in. He wanted Duryodhan out, Dhritarashtra to have no influence, and he wanted his men, Yudhisthira, Prichit, to take over. It's Krishna's garden. You cannot accept just one side of Krishna and reject the other side. If we take proper guidance, then we'll know how to use everything for Krishna's service. So, seeing Krishna, first understand these things, and then you can begin to understand the presence of the Lord. Understand how everything is meant to be used in Krishna's service. That is the dynamic vision of the devotee. Everything for Krishna. You know the famous example. Prabhupada was shown a picture of a famous yogi in India. And the yogi was seated next to a pile of gold. And the yogi was, I will not let this contamination touch me. It's illusion. It's all false. I am pure. The Brahmin said, they should make a picture of us. We'll need a pile of gold. And we'll say, not because because we want the goal for ourselves. No, we want everything for Krishna. So in that simple example, you can see the glory of Srimad Bhagavatam knowledge. Nirbandha Krishna Sambandhe Yuktam Vairagya Uchyate. Things in relation to Krishna are special. When everything is used in Krishna's service, then the direct connection to Krishna is there. A devotee of Krishna wants to see the whole world spiritualized by the whole world having connection to Krishna. Actually, Krishna is already here. Everything is always connected to Krishna, but we don't see it. Therefore, what we want to do is change the vision people have so that they'll see the connection to Krishna has always been there. You cannot order Krishna. I want to see you. Come with your flute. I want to see you now. You can't order. How would you like someone to order like that to you? Someone you don't know. I want to see you. Come. How would you feel? Suppose you're walking down the street, you don't mind, someone, some stranger comes up to you. I want to see you. You need to just cover your head and run away. So, why do we do that to Krishna? Okay, Krishna, where are you? I want to see you with your flute. I want to see all those pastimes right now. Come on. That actually is a demoniac attitude. But this is a hard point for us to understand. The desire to see God without qualification is demoniac. If someone wants to see you, you want to see that they're qualified. Have you developed some affinity for me? Have you developed some understanding of me? Unless you're drunk or just a depraved person, how many of you would just allow anyone who has not your trust, anyone who hasn't developed affinity for you, to just come up to you, I want to see you. Be mine. Doesn't happen like that. I know one case, two devotees, before they were devotees. Munichari and Shrutichari. they were both going to school in Hamilton, to university. So he was walking with his friend somewhere, and all of a sudden, this girl comes walking by, who he had never saw before, didn't know. And he just turned to his friend and said, see that girl? I'm going to marry her. Never seen her before. So then he found out who she was and started talking to her. And just from the very beginning, you're supposed to marry me. And she just thought, that's crazy. The guy's nuts. But he was so persistent. So that's very abnormal. Very abnormal. But generally, of course, even in that abnormal situation, at first you're thinking, this is ridiculous. I don't even know you. Who are you? I've never seen you before. And you are saying, you want to marry me? Get real. So the point still is there. There has to be qualification for there to be a relationship. The desire to see God without qualification is a demoniac Kali Yuga urge. Where's Krishna? Come on, I've been here a few days now. I've got the meat out of my intestines. the cannabis is starting to leave my system. There's a few minutes of the day when I don't think of sex life. Where's Krishna? This is how Harry is. So just think about it. The burden should be upon us. I must obtain the qualification to see Krishna everywhere. You cannot order Krishna. Actually, a real devotee sees Krishna through the vision of the Guru. That is the mystic knowledge that Prabhupada taught, the confidential knowledge. You meet Krishna through the order of the Guru. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, stop trying to see Krishna in the bushes of Vrindavan while you're engaged in sense gratification. Just follow the order of the Guru. The purpose of the Guru is to give you the eyes to see Krishna by engaging you in devotional service, by teaching you how to connect everything to Krishna's pleasure. That is the purpose of the Guru, to do that humble service on behalf of the Supreme Lord. Not that the spiritual master just sits back and gets a lot of worship and a lot of stones tossed at him too. Not that, yeah, that's it. No. The spiritual master is a function, a person functioning to teach you how to use everything in Krishna's service, how to develop the qualification for seeing Krishna. But that is a very exalted task. That's a very exalted job and responsibility. Therefore, we glorify the Guru. Not that he's an entity in and of himself, like some kind of personality cult. No. He's glorified because he's doing the work. He's doing Krishna's babysitting for him. Yes, some of you, you've ever had those of your mothers? Who's had a, any mothers here? Oh, my gosh. Yes. You ever use a babysitter before? Never? Never, not once. Your kids are so wonderful, you didn't want to be separated from them even for a moment. No other mom. Yeah. Did you ever use a babysitter? Alright. So you were appreciative that if you found a good babysitter, right? That someone who would take care of the kids properly. Yes. So, similarly, the Guru is Krishna's babysitter. Krishna's happy. I've got a good babysitter. Someone to take care of these. Yeah. Help them to go back to Gaya. So, because the job is important, therefore the Guru is glorified. Spiritual master gets the credit and the blame on behalf of Krishna. If the disciples don't follow the regular principles, the spiritual master gets a reaction. If the disciples are doing nicely, the spiritual master gets credit. So it goes both ways. Generally, people only see one side. Oh, you're getting all the praise. You're getting all this, all that, all the maha. They don't see the other side. You get the blame also when disciples make mistakes. Their sinful consciousness gets reflected onto your consciousness. It's like you're walking down the street in good Krishna consciousness and all of a sudden something just shoots in your mind. Where did that come from? Then you know. Someone's not doing right. That's the way it works. If we want to see Krishna, then we have to develop qualification. That requires training. That's the purpose of this temple here. Sometimes we forget that. The whole purpose of the temple is to give you a chance to always think of Krishna. By always thinking of Krishna, you'll see Krishna. But there has to be a deep absorption in Krishna's service. If you want to see Krishna at home, you have to make your home into a temple. Now anyway, one final point. Actually, in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, in this process as given by Lord Chaitanya, we're not actually eager to see Krishna. We're eager to serve Krishna. That's the attitude Lord Chaitanya has taught. Krishna, I may see you, I may not see you. You may show yourself to me, you may not show yourself to me. It doesn't matter. I'm your servant, unconditionally. This is hard to understand from the material platform. What do you mean? You say, the goal of bhakti yoga is to see God, and then you say, but even if I don't see God, so what? This doesn't make sense. The fact is, the greatest devotees of the Lord, even when they don't see Krishna, they never blame Krishna. Just like the gopis in Vrindavan. When Krishna left Vrindavan to go to Mathura and Dwarka, apparently they were suffering in separation, but they never gave up on Krishna. Krishna, since you're not coming back, we're going to forget you. Sometimes they would seem to say that, but they could never do it. Just like sometimes in Vrindavan, the gopis would say, let's stop talking about Krishna. What's the point in talking about him? He's in Mathura, he's in Dwarka, enjoying with the city ladies. He's forgotten about us. Let's just forget about Krishna. We're going to stop talking about Krishna. There's no point in talking about Krishna. Krishna, he did this. Krishna, he did that. Now Krishna is in Mathura, Dwarka. He's doing something else. We're going to just stop talking about Krishna because there's no point in talking about Krishna. Why should we talk about Krishna when Krishna did this and Krishna did that? That's why I didn't forget it. In this way, actually, Krishna was with them more than anyone. This is the mystery of bhakti. Love of Krishna in separation. The intense feelings of separation of the residents of Vrindavan brought them Krishna's presence more than anyone. That's why Krishna told the gopis, I can't repay you for your service. Even in the lifetime of Lord Brahma, 311 trillion years, I can't repay you. You've remained true to me in all circumstances. Even on the one hand, that Krishna wasn't there, actually Krishna was there because of their deep feelings of separation. This is the mystery of Vrindavan. Therefore, the actual goal of Vaishnavism, as given by Lord Chaitanya, is never mind if I don't see Krishna, he's my worshipful Lord unconditionally. In that attitude, you actually see Krishna. So it's a real paradox, a real mystery. Actually, a devotee is not demanding, Krishna, I want to see you. The devotee is demanding, Krishna, give me service. And in the service, you'll see Krishna. It's like I remember Prabhupada telling one of my god sisters, if you just go out on Sankirtan every day, one day you'll see Krishna on the street. This is showing how through service you see Krishna when Krishna is pleased. But you don't demand. Just like at night, you don't go on the roof of the temple and demand with a torch in your hand, where's the sun? Where's the sun? Any of you ever done that? Celia, have you done like that? Gone on the roof of your house in the middle of the night with a torch and demanded, I want to see the sun. Why wouldn't you do that? Huh? What would you do instead? You'd wait until sunrise for the sun comes up of its own will. Similarly, we render service to Krishna and Krishna will appear to us of his own will. Actually, Krishna is always present. We have to learn to see him. So tomorrow we'll be speaking more about how Krishna is always present. You can't minimize the way Krishna tells you to see him and say, oh, I want something more. No, you take Krishna's instructions seriously. You have to see him in everything. We'll speak about that tomorrow. For today, please remember the attitude of Vrindavan. This is the attitude taught by Srimati Radharani, the greatest devotee of Krishna. I may see Krishna, I may not see Krishna, it doesn't matter. He's my worshipable Lord unconditionally. This attitude of Srimati Radharani is what Lord Chaitanya came to demonstrate. Love of Krishna and separation is the most intense experience of being with Krishna. Even more than meeting Krishna. This is the special significance of Lord Chaitanya Sampradaya. Feeling separation from Krishna is more intense association with Krishna even than meeting Krishna. Therefore, Krishna was not unjust to leave the gopis. He was giving himself to them more because in their apparent madness of separation, they had Krishna's presence more than anyone. Uddhava saw this when he went to visit Vrindavan. Krishna did him the favor of giving him a letter from Krishna to bring to the residence of Vrindavan. But the other purpose was also so that Uddhava could study the love and separation of the residence of Vrindavan. So Uddhava began talking to Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda. And he heard Nanda Maharaj ask him, does Krishna remember us? Will Krishna ever return, even for a visit? We don't think he's coming back ever permanently. Can he at least visit? Does he think of us? Does he remember the Cowherd Boys? Does he remember Govardhan Hill, the Yamuna River? Does he remember the gopis? And then Uddhava looked at Mother Yashoda. She would not open her eyes because Mother Yashoda, as long as Krishna was gone, wouldn't look at any other face. She just kept her eyes closed and cried. So Uddhava told them, I've seen it all. You are the topmost meditators on Krishna. You are the topmost yogis. You're seeing Krishna everywhere. So this is the mystery of Vrindavan. It's beyond even understanding the opulences of the Lord in Vaikuntha. How it is that the residents of this apparently simple cowherd village were the greatest transcendentalists. This is the mystery. In Vrindavan, everyone just thinks of Krishna. Even if Krishna apparently is not there, just like during the day, what happens when Krishna goes to the forest with the cowherd boys and the cows? Back in the village of Vrindavan, the gopis are just wondering, when will he return? It could be that Krishna has just left for the forest, but still, they're feeling a second of separation to be like a yuga. They're wondering, what is Krishna's feeling as they walk in the forest? Those feet are so soft and tender. They're meant for us. But those same feet meant for us, they're walking on the sharp stones in the forest. So while Krishna's in the forest, they're absorbed in thoughts of Krishna in the village. Sometimes the gopis look at the sun in the sky. Oh no, the sun is still high in the sky. That means it's going to be a long time before evening, before the sun sets. Because when evening comes, that means Krishna's coming back from the forest. Look, the sun has moved. Why is the sun still in the same place? Then they look at the roads leading to the forest. We don't see any dust clouds hanging over those roads. Oh, how long will this go on? If we would see dust clouds appearing on the roads, what would that tell us? Krishna and the cows are coming back. but we don't see any dust clouds. Then they listen. What's that? We hear Krishna's flute, but it's so far away, so deep in the forest. Oh, Krishna, it'll be a long time before we see him again in the evening. This is Vrindavan. Then in the evening, Krishna returns, playing his flute with Balaram, his curly hair with dust from the hoofs of the cows. And then it's a festival every evening when Krishna returns. All the gopis are watching. But actually, Krishna never leaves. Because of their intense feelings of separation, they're always with Krishna. So this is the mystery of seeing Krishna. And this is what Lord Chaitanya came to teach. Become attached to your devotional service. And when Krishna wants you to see him, you'll see him. But actually, you are seeing Krishna through your service. It's a paradox. This is what Krishna consciousness is actually about. So, any questions? Yes.
How do we see in relation to Krishna things like explore that for devotees being admired and explore that back and the language association or something like that?
What's the last thing about association, you
said? No, you kind of reduce that back and association with devotees and things like that.
Yes. It's a fact. Everyone has their independence. And when devotees misuse their independence, it causes you to question what's going on here. Am I being taken? You have to be practical. What happens at a hospital when a patient doesn't follow the doctor's instructions or is a little inattentive in following the doctor's instructions? Do you blame the whole hospital? Nevertheless, it does make the hospital look bad. But practically speaking, you don't blame the hospital. What kind of hospital is this? All the patients should be proper. So when leaders in Krishna consciousness make mistakes, it does make things look bad. You have to understand who is the actual leader of Krishna consciousness. It is Krishna. Krishna never shortchanges anyone. I remember seeing a letter Srila Prabhupada wrote to one of the early leaders in the early 70s who went off. So Prabhupada wrote, I have given you such a big opportunity to do service for Krishna, to be a leading devotee, and now I'm hearing these things said about you. Do you understand how sad I feel to hear these things? But then, he said, but I know the right persons will come forward to help me spread Lord Chaitanya's movement. If not you, someone else. Krishna's will marches on, and because Srila Prabhupada was such an extraordinary devotee, his will marches on. There are upsets and setbacks when Srila Prabhupada was physically present, and certainly there'll be upsets and setbacks now. Even some of you young devotees, you'll experience a setback if one of your friends drops Krishna consciousness. It'll be a big blow for you. God forbid, but it happens. And then you'll question, oh, what am I doing here? Bhakti so-and-so went away. Or so-and-so took initiation and 6 months later is in Maya. Oh, my friend. It'll be a test for you. Ultimately, you have to know how to save yourself. So we have the facility for saving ourselves. But it's a fact, what you said. It's true. When someone slips up in Krishna consciousness, it reduces our faith. That's why I stress that each one of you has the responsibility to understand Krishna. You can't push the responsibility off on someone else. All facilities should be given to you to become a good servant of Krishna. But the responsibility is on your shoulders. Of course, leaders have the responsibility to lead properly. And it is a disturbance when they don't. So it's a double-sided answer I'm giving you. This world is one of disturbances. We're trying to become Krishna conscious in the material world. There's the rub. So therefore there are disturbances. But we have the instructions to march on in spite of the disturbances. Other questions? Yes.
Maharaj, in the beginning of the class, you were talking about how we make the choice either for Maya or Krishna, and there's no in between. And that illusion sometimes makes us think that there is something else or there is a choice. So my question is, it does appear even within Krishna consciousness and within the society of devotees, there's different levels of intensity. And it even appears that, like, if devotees want to, they can take a path of kind of sitting in the mode of goodness, or, you know, kind of like maybe Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha, or some kind of a mode of goodness path where they're not fully falling into Maya, they're not necessarily making a great advancement. So can you just elaborate on that?
Yes, water seeks its own level. Devotees will make their choices how much they want to be Krishna conscious, how much they really want to see Krishna. That's the way it is. It'll always be like that. There's nothing you can do about it. Just like there's nothing you can do about someone in the spiritual world who says, I'd like to try something else besides Krishna. There's nothing you can do about that. It's just the way it is. This is the real world. Independence. Choice. But I say, if Krishna is indeed unlimitedly attractive, we should want to fall unlimitedly in love with Krishna. Why only a little Krishna? Why should we only take a little Krishna? If there's no limit to Krishna's attractiveness, why should we just take a little? Practically speaking, though, many people will come to Krishna consciousness who don't want Krishna completely. So you have to serve them also. Okay, take a nibble. Maybe your next life you'll want the whole feast. Suppose there's a real good feast. Who's going to be cooking the... You have... There's a feast cooking crew or something. Anyway. I'm sure the prasad will be very good.
He's just been cooking a feast for breakfast.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. So... Suppose you sit down at a nice feast and you say, ah, look at that. 13 preparations. You can see the ghee glistening in the light. Yes, look at all that. 13 preparations. I think I'll just take one grain of rice. Would you do that?
No.
Why not? Yeah, you want all of it, right? Similarly, why should you just take a little bit of Krishna? Krishna's unlimitedly attractive. You should want it all. So just think about that the next time you sit down at a feast. Just think, all right, I'm just taking one grain of rice, that's it. You won't do that. You want to binge. Look at this. Sweet rice, ladu, sabjis, halava. How do I eat it all? I will somehow. So that's the attitude you should have about Krishna. Why just one grain of rice?
Yeah, it's been an analogy, but sometimes one restricts that desire to binge because one may feel that one's capacity may not be able to handle the full feast. So
the full feast of Krishna consciousness.
So sometimes devotees, they maybe can't handle the intensity of Krishna consciousness, so they restrict.
But when we say Krishna consciousness is intense, we don't mean it in a bad way. There are many moods in the ocean of bhakti. There's calm, there's dynamic activity. So there's nothing wrong with intensity. You shouldn't say intense Krishna consciousness in a negative way. But sometimes you find hours where there's, for some reason, there's not much to do. It seems you can just sit down and read. So it seems like a quiet, non-intense time, but reading is very intense. So I'm using intense in a different sense. Here's what you want. Out of love, you always want to think of Krishna. Out of love, you always want to serve Krishna. It's all based on love, or, in the beginning stages, developing love. There are different styles for serving Krishna. But the whole point is to always think of Krishna and always serve Krishna. Whether you are a quiet person or you are a very loud person, both of you are intense in terms of serving Krishna. Because Krishna is an intensely attractive. So intense doesn't mean you have to jump up and down all the time. Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Ki Jai, Ki Jai. Mean that. Intense means you cannot say a word, but you're always thinking, how can Krishna be served better? If you're a quiet devotee, but you're always thinking, how can Krishna be served better? Internally, you're always thinking like that. It's like, for example, Prabhupada Swami. Good example. He doesn't look like he's going around in a loud way, but internally he's always thinking how to serve Krishna. It's intense. You can be the quietest person, but you're always looking what is being used for Krishna. How can things be better for Krishna? That's an intense meditation. So the intensity doesn't mean you'll just you know, get some whoppers and play out of tune, out of time. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. not everyone's like that, right? Especially New Zealand. The Australians are like that, right? Yeah. New Zealanders are quiet and composed, right? Mellow, peaceful, discriminative, right? Reflective. So, intenseness doesn't mean like physical exertion. It means that you're always thinking at every moment how Krishna can better be served. Okay? Any else? Ladies, have no questions? You're intensely thinking. Hi. Hare Krishna, all glories.
Yes. Yes.